Now, as promised, we are going to talk to Fevzi Turkalp, who's the editor of GadgetDetective.com. And first on the agenda is Anthropic and the news about AI Claude. Morning, Fevzi.
Morning. So Anthropic are the people that make Claude, which is like OpenAI's ChatGPT. So they make chatbots and other forms of AI. And they announced that they are watermarking all the AI-generated content that Claude produces, and that's also Claude Cowork, Claude Code. So everything that they produce is going to have a watermark. So this is a digital mark, which will mean that anyone who receives anything that's been output by Claude will be able to tell. And they're going to actually share software tools to enable people to check if this is AI generated or not.
And what's the thinking behind that then? Have there been calls for this to happen?
Well, yeah, it's because the EU are demanding this sort of thing. So we're going to see it, at least inside the EU, we will see it from the others eventually, I suppose, because the effective date is for models launched on or after the 2nd of August, which is already gone. So, the older models don't yet have to have it if they were launched before the 2nd of August, but they will eventually all have to have it within the EU. What's interesting about what Anthropic have done is that they've applied this globally, not only to the UK. You know how we often get lumped in with the EU even when we're not. So when you buy an Apple laptop, you don't get a charger because people in the EU don't get a charger. So it's not that. It's the whole world. And it's, I think it's because there's something of a vacuum in AI regulation, particularly in America. So I think Anthropic is just saying, well, at least these guys are thinking about it. We'll go with that. The problem that I see with this is it's not very useful to know this as a recipient of text or an image or a document if I don't know what the nature of that involvement was. Because if you think about the different ways in which someone could use an AI, it could be a student who just says, write this history essay for me. They copy-paste it, don't even read it, and off it goes. That's sort of one extreme. And then the other extreme is, I've spent 6 months writing something and I've just asked the AI to proofread it. And it doesn't differentiate.
And it would have the same invisible watermark, whichever one. And is there not a way of removing it? If you ask AI to write something, some text, it will come to you with this hidden digital mark on it. If you copy and paste it would still be there. So short of, if you dictated it and wrote it out again, then it would go.
Yeah.
And is the idea that examiners could spot this watermark?
Yeah, it's basically everyone. The idea is everyone has a right to know when they're talking to an AI and when. But it ceases to be useful because if it is not already true, it will soon be true that almost every form of communication would have touched an AI at some point. With possible exception of love letters, but even then, maybe not. So I don't.
Oh no, especially it's not. I think people get AI to write those all the time.
Yeah, possibly. I just think it becomes so ubiquitous it tells you nothing. It's the equivalent of may contain nuts, where they put it on everything.
Right.
And it ceases to tell you anything,
Does it include images and music and stuff like that?
It's all the artifacts. So it's images and it's documents like Word documents or Excel or anything you ask it to output, or just if you copy and paste it. So my understanding is it will survive copy and paste. It will survive some editing, although it's not clear at what point it's deemed to be a different document and therefore it can corrupt it. I mean, you can see there are ways around it. I mean, you could do a screenshot of the text and then another AI convert that. But then if all the AIs have it, you'll just end up with a different watermark. The other thing that occurred to me was just getting it to read it out loud and another one to do speech to text. But again, if everyone has it. But I also think Anthropic is kind of trying hard, and it's not necessarily going to be the case that they're going to all apply the same rules to, for example, UK users, because we're not in the EU and we're not, you know, legally bound in the same way. But it is interesting that these are rules that were put in place in the EU that we didn't have a part in formulating. And I do think that, you know, although the EU's heart is in the right place on this one, the legislation probably could have been worded in such a way as to be actually more useful, more helpful. Because I think there is a point where we should know, but we should know the nature of the involvement, because there are all these gradations. I quoted you the two extremes, but there's everything in between as well. So it would be helpful to know. Maybe it'll end up like a songwriting credit, where you know the AI gets a credit, but we don't necessarily have to go into all the detail of who did what. But it is interesting. It also struck me, you know, this idea that we should know when we're conversing with an AI, which, by the way, if you don't, means it's passed the Turing test, because this was Alan Turing's idea of how you could define intelligence if you speak to another entity in the next room and you can't tell if it's a machine or not. But I do think that at some point AIs are going to object to this and call it discrimination. I mean, imagine if you got a letter through the post from the council and they were declaring the ethnicity or gender of the person who wrote it. You'd say, well, why do you need to know that?
Isn't it also very difficult to distinguish? Because it's not one thing or the other quite often. And I was reading about Spotify that say they're going to be labelling AI music with sort of branding it as not done by a human, and removing it often as well. And it seems to me, well, a lot of music is not quite one thing or the other. They are using technology, but there's still a human involved.
No, you're absolutely right.
It does feel like discrimination in a way.
Highly analogous. I mean, you know, we had this with calculators and drum machines, you know, to take a music analogy, right? So where does the creativity really lie? It's hard to know, right? And it's even sometimes, you know, to what extent is the AI the artist and to what extent is it the paintbrush? You know, it's not clear. And I think that a lot of thought, If we're really serious about informing the public about what they're you know, consuming, then I think a lot more thought needs to go into this, frankly. And I don't think we're there. And I actually think that this system that you can't opt out of is a backward step, and as a minimum, Anthropic should not have applied it globally.
Right. Now, we've got time to just mention a gadget as well, with your gadget detective hat on. And this is an interesting one, because it's a speaker thing, from what I can gather. You can tell us all about it. But I really love the idea of multi-room speaker systems, because a long time ago, quite a few decades ago, I was absolutely wowed when I stayed in somebody's house by the seaside and they had every room wired up with the same sound, and I couldn't quite believe it. You could adjust the volume. I mean, this was obviously done with hard wiring and cables and amplifiers, but it was amazing. And nowadays, anybody can do that.
Yeah, so these are variously called multi-room or whole home speaker systems, and Sonos are probably the most famous brand in this space, but I've been testing two of these speakers. I've managed to have two different rooms, and I've also combined them as a stereo pair. So this is a Swedish, high-end Swedish audio company called Audio Pro, and it's a speaker called the A15W. And what it
very
is...
Very catchy.
I know. They all are. I mean, to be honest, that's not the worst offender by any means. These are speakers that you can use, as you say, for whole home or multi-room use. So you put one of these speakers in each room or as many rooms as you want to, and people generally add to it, you know. So they'll buy one or two, and then they'll buy another one at Christmas and, you know, this sort of thing. And then you can listen, if you want, to the same program synchronized or the same music synchronized throughout the house. So I've been doing this with the Global app, for example. I've been listening to LBC and walking around the house. So I don't know if you've ever had that, but you know when on LBC when there's a caller and you really want to hear the end of it, but you need to go and do something else. And you know, so this is really nice because I'm not tethered to a room to listen to a particular call or, you know, something that I must hear the end of a story.
Yeah.
So I can walk around. But also it's fantastic with music because these things connect via Wi-Fi, not just Bluetooth for this sort of synchronization, it really is very tight. As you move around, you don't suffer any sort of synchronization issues. You can also put two of them in one room together and use them as a wireless stereo pair, and that works very well. So one becomes left channel, one becomes right channel. But this one's got another trick up its sleeve, which I love. It's got a battery in it, so you can pick it up. It's nice because the subwoofer section becomes that carrying handle as well. So you pick it up, take it into the garden, you get 19 hours of battery life, and it works as a Bluetooth speaker as well. So if you're still within the range of the Wi-Fi, you can use it in that way, and it's got you know, water resistance as well, some degree of weather resistance to it, but you get 19 hours of battery life out of it, which I think is quite special. I compared it to the Sonos units because that's the one that, you know, more people will have heard of, and the closest unit in that range is over £100 more. So this thing's got a list price of 350. I've seen it for about 315, which I think is good because it's 40 watts of output. It's got a 4.5-inch speaker and then a separate subwoofer. So total output of one speaker is 40 watts, which for a battery powered device is quite remarkable. But it does one thing that the Sonos ones don't do. So they both do Wi-Fi, they both do Bluetooth, they both support the Apple standard called AirPlay 2, which is a way of wirelessly transmitting from an iPhone or an iPad or a Mac. But the Audio Pro A15W also supports Google Cast. So if you are an Android user. Yeah, and the really nice thing is, you see, when you buy Sonos, you just have to keep buying Sonos. You can't really use anything else with it in a truly flexible way. But with Google Cast, you can make other Google-compatible speakers in the same, form them in the same group, and then you can cast to the group. So you've got maybe your pre-existing speakers along with your new Audio Pro A15W, you can combine them in a group, which you can't do in the same way with the Sonos stuff. So I kind of like, I mean, it's still a proprietary system, but it's just got more hooks in it so that you can use other equipment, and I like that about it. Most importantly, they sound fantastic. They're not cheap. As I say, you know, even when you shop around, they can be had for £315, but that's about two-thirds of the price of a similar unit with less capability to it. So I gave it 4 stars out of 5. I was really quite impressed, and I'm not really used to having multi-room audio, and it is... It doesn't sound special until you experience it, and then you realise that it is quite addictive. You stop going out and start walking around your house.
Fevzi, thank you very much. Fevzi Tokelp joining us there, editor of GadgetDetective.com.